Hello. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from AARP. Last week, we talked about how to survive almost anything. Social distancing means we're on our own more than ever. If an emergency were to occur, here's the expert advice you need to be prepared and to come out unharmed. So moving along, your husband was out working in the sun, and he just collapsed. As we age, our bodies become less efficient at regulating temperature. That puts us at greater risk of heat illness. Drink plenty of water before going outside, and eat a banana. It's rich in potassium, which helps regulate body fluid. Heat illness can be a life-threatening problem that arrives in stages. If you detect heat stroke, call 911. The symptoms are heat cramps. Muscle cramps suggest dehydration. Move the victim into the shade and give him some water, even if he's not thirsty, said Shane Kerwin, a former medical sergeant in the U.S. Army Special Forces and founder of Personal Survivor Solutions. Cramps mean their electrolytes are down, so give them Gatorade cut with water, since sports drinks tend to be high on sugar, he says. Heat exhaustion. Profuse sweating is a big indicator of heat exhaustion, and this is serious, Kerwin said. Get him into a cooler place and take his hat off, then untuck and unbutton his shirt and sleeves to allow cool air to push his temperature down. Have him sip water, not guzzle it, if you want to avoid vomiting. Heat stroke. A lack of sweating. Bright red skin, a flushed face, lethargy, and slurring are all symptoms of heat stroke. This is a serious emergency. Call 911. Apply cool compresses to the groin and armpits to lower the core temperature, Curran says. Don't immerse the body in cold water, which can shock the heart out of rhythm. Another episode, creepy people are approaching you from behind. Walk with your head up, showing that you're confident and aware of your surroundings. If you have a cane, give it a fast little twirl and keep walking, said Smark. Cane master Shuri, 73, a martial arts champion who teaches cane fu to seniors through his site canemasters.com. Anyone trying to figure out if you're a good target or not will walk away. Save yourself. Learn the figure eight and holster. Swing the crook of the cane around one hand and then trace a series of figure eights in front of you with your arm. Then swing the shaft of the cane under your armpit to stop it. An impressive move, Shuey calls the holster. One of my guys, he's 75 years old. Three punks come at him saying, "Hey, old man, got any money?" Well, he steps away from the car, does his figure eight, and holsters his cane. And those punks take off running. Go for the groin. If a guy is coming at you, just lift the cane up and hit him between his legs. Very simple, Shuey says. Stops him every time. You can carry a cane anywhere, even on an airplane. It's an improved medical device, so it will always be there for you. You've lost the trail, and it's getting dark. The National Park Service says there's an average of 11 search and rescue situations every day. To save yourself, if you find yourself lost in the woods, follow the STOP guidelines. Stop. As soon as you realize you may be lost, stop. Stay calm and stay put. Think. Go over in your mind how you got to where you are. What trail markers should you be able to see? Observe. Get out your compass, you should have one loaded on your smartphone, and determine the directions based on where you're standing. Consider backtracking, but don't plod aimlessly ahead. Moving just a mile increases rescuer's search area by 3 square miles. Plan. Your priorities for survival are shelter, water, food, fire. If you already have enough water, or if you're cold and wet, shelter and then fire may be more immediately important. People can succumb to hypothermia even at temperatures over 60 degrees in wet, windy conditions. The body loses heat 25 times faster in cold water. Be prepared. If going on a day hike, leave a plan with someone that includes your start and return time, location of the trailhead and names of trails, turnaround points and GPS coordinates, names of the people in your party, gear and amount of food and water you have with you, description of clothing individuals in the party are wearing, photo of the bottom of your hiking boots for footprint pattern, and details about what you'll do in an emergency. Crisis! Your dog just ate a whole bar of chocolate. That's the number one concern. The darker the chocolate, the more dangerous it is because of higher amounts of theobromine. It's a cousin chemical to caffeine and can make the heart race and blood pressure go up. Even more toxic to dogs is xylitol, the sugar substitute in many sugarless gums. When dogs eat it, the substance is quickly absorbed into the bloodstream, resulting in a potent release of insulin from the pancreas and dramatic decrease in blood sugar level. To save your pet, if you suspect your dog ate something toxic, call your vet or the Pet Poison Helpline, 800-213-6680. They know what's dangerous and what to do. Don't induce vomiting. Sometimes it's not necessary. Other times it can do more damage. Oven and toilet bowl cleaners, for example, are caustic and can damage the esophagus on the way back up. Unless you're told to induce vomiting. If instructed by a vet, or if you are certain that your dog ate xylitol or chocolate within the last 10 to 20 minutes, it's recommended that you induce vomiting with hydrogen peroxide. The helpline will tell you the right dose, which will irritate the stomach and cause your pooch to hurl. Use a syringe and squirt it in the back of his cheek pouch, or pour it in some milk. Sneaking it in with food usually works only once. Then they get smart to it. Now let's move on to happiness in hard times. This is by Sherry Horar. Research shows that joy is wired into our genes, brain circuits, and biology, an integral part of our health equation. And in moments like these, it matters more than ever. On the short list of songs that have brought the world joy, you would be hard-pressed to top the Beatles' Here Comes the Sun with its lilting melody and deeply hopeful lyrics. The smiles returning to the faces, I feel that ice is slowly melting. No wonder that hospitals played it repeatedly over their public address systems this spring as an auditory balm in some of the most stress-filled, soul-searching places on the planet. The intensive care units overflowing with COVID-19 patients struggling to stay alive. At Lenox Hill Hospital in New York City, the song started up every time a coronavirus patient was discharged or recovered enough to breathe without the help of a ventilator. Everyone in the hospital is under tremendous pressure, says pulmonologist Stephen Feinsilver, who has been caring for non-COVID-19 lung cases to free his colleagues to treat those with the coronavirus. especially for those I see on the front lines of critical care. It's like a war zone here. The work is relentless. To hear this song on the loudspeaker is brilliant. It's just what people need, a reminder that patients are recovering. You feel good for a moment. Feeling good may be the last thing on your mind as the coronavirus pandemic grinds into its seventh month in America. As we struggle to revive after arguably one of the world's worst health and economic calamities, is even talking about happiness self-absorbed and inappropriate? Quite the contrary. Countless researchers say, pursuing happiness, and more importantly, finding it, matters more during the dark times, says Laurie Santos, a professor of psychology at Yale University. Happiness gives us the resilience to get through. This is a challenging time because it's both a physical and a mental health crisis. We need to focus on happiness more now, not less. The emotional lift provided by that Beatles song shouldn't be underestimated, notes Lenox Hill nurse manager Amanda Griffiths. The song played some 20 times on a single day, Griffiths recalls, and each repetition made her feel better. It was an overwhelming sense of, wow, we're making a difference. I got very teary-eyed. Clearly, the kind of happiness that matters in tough times has nothing to do with birthday hats or smiley faces. This isn't delusional Hollywood glee and delight, says psychologist Maria Serraz, author of A Short Course in Happiness After Loss. The happiness that helps in great difficulty is realistic. It recognizes fear and anxieties. It looks for meaning. It nourishes and sustains us. To better understand happiness and its role in hard times, AARP asked me to speak with the full spectrum of researchers and doctors focused on the topic to find out the deeper truths of joy. Here is what they want you to know. Lesson number one, happiness is possible in dark hours. In the wake of a life-shattering crisis or global disaster, something surprisingly positive often happens. 2 months after the World Trade Center terrorist attacks in 2001, a University of Pennsylvania survey of over 4,000 Americans found that they felt more gratitude, hope, kindness, and love than they did before 9/11. And the effect wasn't transitory. In a 3-year State University of New York at Buffalo study of 1,382 American adults, 58% said they continued to see positive consequences emerge from the attacks. They weren't hiding their heads in the sand or pretending the disaster hadn't happened. A study by psychology professor Barbara Fredrickson, now at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, found that students acknowledged the great despair, anger, and fear they felt after 9/11, but some also were buoyed by what Fredrickson calls the ordinary magic of fleeing positive emotions, such as those sparked recently in hospital patients hearing "Here Comes the Sun." Finding positive meaning may be the most powerful leverage point for cultivating positive emotions during times of crisis. It's intuitive that happiness helps create and sustain emotional resilience, but the converse is true, too. Emotional resilience, knowing how you can get through a crisis with a little less despair and a little more sanity and perspective, can also lead to happiness. Medical studies confirm it. They found that people dealing with a serious health crisis, like cancer, spinal cord injury, or debilitating chronic pain, who found a higher sense of meaning in their plight, also experienced better emotional well-being. How? By switching from nursing their personal sense of tragedy to encouraging empathy with others who might have it worse. That's why so many volunteers feel deep joy in what they're doing. Suffering is never good, of course, and right now, more than one-third of Americans say this pandemic is having a serious impact on their mental health, according to a national poll by the American Psychiatric Association. This may not be the time to focus on fun and laughs, but something deeper can help. Sir Royce, who has written about the emotional resilience of children with cancer and their families, calls it positivity, a mix of realism, hope, and compassion. Holocaust survivor and psychiatrist Viktor Frankl famously called it tragic optimism. The good news is we can all reach for it. After a crisis, it's estimated that up to two-thirds of adults actually experience an increase in well-being that the American Psychological Association calls post-traumatic growth. Getting to these constructive emotional states begins with acknowledging the bad. I could binge-watch Netflix for 7 hours a day, but that won't sustain me spiritually or emotionally or in my relationships, Sirio said. Let yourself feel what you're really feeling. Then think about what's important to you right now. What's in line with your values? What could be more kindness? Spirituality, appreciating life in all its big and small moments, using your own strengths more in the world. Finally, act on these goals. Go slow. Take small steps. When you pay attention to how you shape your life right now, you won't feel victimized by what's going on, she says. Resilient people know they have the choice. Happiness doesn't come from the outside. 2. Laurie Santos knows a lot about unhappy people. Witnessing the stress and joylessness of her students at Yale, the psychology professor developed a course in 2018 titled Psychology and the Good Life that revealed the physical and emotional underpinnings of happiness and what could be done to increase them. The course became an instant campus phenomenon and then a worldwide sensation. Nearly a million people of all ages signed up for a free online version in the first 3 months of this year. The 10-lesson session online class romps through all of the science-based strategies for happiness you've probably heard about, like eating well, sleeping well, exercising, and managing stress. But Santos also makes a big point of dispelling misconceptions that block true well-being. Turns out we're terrible at predicting what will actually make us happy. So we go after the wrong things, money, status, and overlook the unique, everyday stuff that truly jazzes us. To start, we compare ourselves to others rather than pursuing our own bliss. Comparing yourself to other people is a great way to feel less happy, Santos says. Case in point, in studies of Olympic medalists, bronze medalists look genuinely happier with their third-place win than silver medalists. It's easy to beat yourself up because you didn't get the gold medal, Santos says, and forget about the amazing experience you're having. We also get so used to the good stuff in our lives that we forget to immerse ourselves in it. And we undervalue the simple stuff because it just seems so simple. Bottom line, our minds suck at happiness, Santos says. They're naturally wired for survival. We pay more attention to trouble. You have to work at happiness. 3 strategies from her course and from other experts have been proven to increase happiness. 1. Connect. Human connection is the classic recipe, the chicken soup for happiness, underscored by some of the most credible experts in the field. Among them is Robert Waldinger, director of the 83-year-old Harvard Study of Adult Development, considered the world's longest-running study of well-being. The clearest message we get from our study is this: good relationships keep us happier and healthier, period, he says. A sense of joy seems to reach into our cells, reducing corrosive forces like inflammation and stress that break down multiple body symptoms over time, like your joints, your cardiovascular system, your brain. Another key finding, it's not the number of friends you have or whether you're in a committed relationship. It's the quality of your relationships that matter. That's something we can work on at any age. 2, move and breathe. Physical activity can boost your happiness by reducing stress and releasing feel-good brain chemicals. Yoga is a good choice. The combination of simple postures with deep breathing can make you feel happier, said Amy Weintraub, an instructor and author of Yoga for Depression. It brings more oxygen to your brain, stimulates your vagus nerve, which calms the anxious mind, and over time can create beneficial brain changes too. Take a moment to savor, pausing to soak in a wonderful moment, a sunrise, the morning's bird song, the joy of our pets, is a great way to learn how to savor. Or you can recall a cherished memory, play music linked to a special moment, or linger over some old photos. A regular savoring habit can increase happiness for longer periods of time, says Jennifer Smith, director of research at Mather Institute in Evanston, Illinois. Lesson number 3. Work with your happiness biology. Here's some optimistic news. As we move through our later years, the typical person grows steadily happier. There really is a U-curve of happiness. Put simply, people in general hit high levels of happiness in their early 20s, low levels in middle age, around 47, and then start seeing a steady increase in joy from that point on. We're not talking about a cultural quirk of Americans. The study involved people from 132 countries. The U-curve occurred in places where wages are high and where they're low, in countries at the very top and the bottom of life expectancy. What explains this curve? Maybe it's genes. Maybe it's coming to terms with our limitations. Whatever the reason, it's ingrained in us. Now, this article does continue on a little bit longer, but in the interest of time, let's move on. Now let's take a look at some everyday heroes, or at least one for today. The grocer. Suddenly, everyone is cooking and baking. We're restocking feverishly. Carrie Johnson's work has never felt so rewarding. The reality of the pandemic didn't hit me until one day in early March, when I walked into the grocery store I own with my daughter, Mackenzie, and it looked like it had been ransacked. Customers had just about wiped out our stock. Mackenzie and I realized we would have to change nearly all our processes overnight. I had sinks installed outside the store so customers could wash their hands. We put as much produce as possible online and made delivery free to customers who are older or immunocompromised. We also reconfigured the store to provide ample space for social distancing and to keep the cashiers and customers 6 feet apart. Before we opened our market 7 years ago, LA's art district was basically a food desert. We were one of the early food businesses to open here, and we've always played an important part in bringing people together through our food. Keeping our 30 employees safe is our number one priority. Everyone comes to work each day with a sense of civic duty and pride. This was always a special mission-focused store, and is even more so now. As restaurants have had to close or switch to carry out, people are getting back into slow food, stews, soups, breads. Suddenly, everyone is cooking and baking. We're stocking and restocking feverishly, and we're quite stressed by the competition to get the inventory to stock our shelves. But every day I experience patience and thoughtfulness that wasn't as prevalent before the pandemic took hold. This crisis is helping people get back to the basics of kindness and good food. I'm concerned about farmers. With restaurants and cafeterias shut, produce sales have fallen as much as 80% in LA. So we're trying to help by buying directly from farms. And I'm concerned for the homeless community. We are very near Skid Row, and it pulls at my heart. I know this will pass. I'm proud of the way we've come together for the community and grateful for the way the community has rallied around us, too. I believe this connection will persist long after the crisis is over. Now, how about a couple of laughs from the AARP bulletin? Employing a skeleton crew. Sometimes traffic gets so slow that you feel as though you'll expire before you reach your destination. A 62-year-old man in Arizona might have used that notion as inspiration for a scheme that allowed him to drive faster. The man propped up a full-size fake skeleton to serve as his passenger so he could use the restricted carpool lane. A state trooper pulled over the car and found the skeleton torso tied to the front passenger seat and wearing a fishing hat that covered most of its head, except for an evil grin that may have been the dead giveaway. A real fish out of water. Almost 45 years ago, as the film Jaws made beachgoers afraid to go into the water, a new late-night comedy show poked fun at the hysteria. On Saturday Night Live, Chevy Chase voiced the clever land shark who would trick apartment dwellers into opening their doors by impersonating people. In a twist that doesn't seem quite so funny, real sharks seem to have been watching and learning. Scientists have revealed the discovery of four new species of shark that have evolved to walk along coral reefs and even on land. Fortunately, they've not figured out how to deliver candygrams yet. From Molly Ringwald, I refuse to accept that clothes from the 80s are vintage. My teenage daughter loves to tell me otherwise. And a joke? Ed, I'm proud of myself. I finished that jigsaw puzzle in just 6 months. Fred, that sounds like a long time. Ed, not when the box says 4 to 6 years. And question, when does a joke become a dad joke? Answer, when it's full grown, G-R-O-A-N. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.